And now for the main event. Jerry Monlar is here to speak to us, and he made it real clear. He's from New York, so it was fun sitting at the table. I'm getting some really blunt answers. Minnesota nice doesn't always understand that. But he just said, don't go into details. Let me tell the story. So I'm going to do that. So Jerry, we welcome you from Minnesota. And you are now in Texas, but he spent most of his time in New York. So Jerry, come on up here. Okay.
Thank you, brother. Now what? I just have a few things to say about Minnesota. It's a great state. I spoke here 7 times within 2 years. I always think, that's it. I'm going to go to Minneapolis Airport. I'm not coming back. And then 2 months later, I get a telephone call. Do you know how blessed I am to be here? I'm blessed that I could speak to you. I'm grateful to be anywhere, to tell you the truth. I want to thank my friend Rob, who drove me here from Minneapolis, Minnesota, the airport rather. My testimony, I'll go nice and sweet and quick if I can. I was born and raised in Jersey City. Really, both parents were alcoholics. We lived in a ghetto. We had no refrigerator. We had an ice box, and it took 15 cents to put the ice in the ice box, and we never had the 15 cents. But we always had money for a six pack, okay? So it was my mother, my sister, and myself, my grandfather, who lived in 3 rooms. It was not a pleasant place. I didn't take a shower until I was like 15 years old. We didn't have a bathtub. So I knew at an early age. My father, first of all, was a politician. He never worked, and when he did work, he would quit every tax season because he was a tax genius. And he ran for all kinds of office, you know, councilman, etc. But he didn't live with us. Maybe I remember him 3 days, you know, living with us. That was it. Of course, if he hit rock bottom, he came. He was forced to leave Jersey City because he threatened the mayor's life. So that's the family I grew up with. My mom worked very hard, and we put the cheese, the milk, on the windowsill because we didn't have a refrigerator. So I knew at the age of 10 that I had to make money. So I shined shoes. I had a paper route. I worked for a scrap dealer. And when I worked for a scrap dealer, I got 2 hot dogs and a bottle of Pepsi and $2. But it was great, okay? I'd jump into the Hackensack River and we'd wash. And boy, I'll tell you, after you came out of the Hackensack River, you stunk, okay? It was terrible. And then I took my paper out and I delivered the papers. I left school at the age of 16. It was a good idea. I never went. I became a messenger on Wall Street. I made like $32 a week, which was great. I'm 75 years old, so we're talking about a long time ago. So I remember my first day as a messenger. I had no bottoms of my shoes. I had like cardboard, and you cut the cardboard on and they fit in the shoes. And I would pray that it didn't rain. So I had one shirt. It was a see-through shirt. And every day I'd come home and wash that same shirt under cold water. And the first paycheck I got, I bought a suit. It was white. It was a white suit. I bought a pair of shoes that was white. I had a white tie. I looked like the Good Humor Man. You remember the Good Humor Man? That was me. I remember getting on the subway going to Wall Street, and I remember some broker saying, "It's his mother's fault." So, well, I went to night school. I was not a very good student. I went to New York Institute of Finance. And I was like out of place, the way I dressed, the way I looked. But they asked me to teach a class in operations, and I did. And it was, I remember the guys from Harvard and Yale, they looked different than me. They had polka dot ties, and they had white bucks. They were the exact opposite of me. I panicked when I saw them in the audience. And I just went out to have a cigarette, and I got a coughing fit, and I just kept going home. I didn't even go back to class. Boy, did they have a fit about that. Anyway, at the age of 22, I met a girl by the name of Cammy. She was like 18. And she was in a beauty contest for New Jersey, and she came in the first runner-up. She was beautiful. She was 5'9", she wore a beehive hairdo, and she wore spiked heels. She was like 6'5", okay? So when we walked together, I looked like Mutt and Jeff. But we got married, and have two daughters, Renee and Robin. I bought our dream house. I'm working on Wall Street now, and I became owner of a couple of small companies, three agencies, and they were pretty successful. With that, I started to drink. I mean, I drank before I owned the agencies, but I became a heavy drinker because there wasn't a party I never went to. And in 1983, I had to do something about my drinking. So I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. First of all, what forced me to Alcoholics Anonymous was my little girl. She was 13. She said, she came in one day, I was out till 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And she came in and she said, "Dad, did you have a good time with the fellas last night?" I went, "Yeah." She says, "Do you know Renee and I, her sister, don't sleep until you get home at night?" Oh, shocked. I was devastated. She says, "We're afraid. We had a winding staircase that you're gonna fall and kill yourself." So the next day, I went for help. I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been there since 1983. I got 35 years without a drink. In Alcoholics Anonymous, I met a man by the name of Sean O'Flaherty. Sean was a trader in coffee. He was pretty popular, handsome guy, smart. The first day I met him in AA, I said, "Geez, this guy, what's he doing following me around like this?" And he says, "I want to help you." I went, "This is weird." You know, I never had anybody come and say, "Listen, we want to help you get through this." Well, he became my sponsor. And I was celebrating 90 days in AA, and you get a coin or a pin. And I remember this. He said, what happened was when I got the pin, I like outsourced myself in my own business. I didn't belong there because I only hired alcoholics and drug addicts, to be honest with you. They made money, so we hired them. But I didn't fit into my own company. So to make a long story short, is that my phone? Okay, because I've been known to have my phone go off when I'm talking. he said, "Come on over to the house tonight, bring your wife, and let's talk about this." I went, "Oh, we're going to talk about maybe getting a few lawyers together and, you know, suing for my business. And he said, you know what you need at this dinner at his house? He says, you need Jesus. I went, oh my God, what a freak this is. I said, this guy's got to be crazy. I just lost the business. I know Jesus. I mean, I grew up with him. I really didn't. But to get a cut to the chase, he said, let's ask him into your heart. I went, oh God, how do we do that? So we prayed a simple prayer. And I'll get into that prayer a little later. And it was different when I left his house. After that, the next day, my wife said to me, what are you going to do now? She said, where would you like to open up a business? And I said, the World Trade Center. She says, okay. We were just reading the paper and they said, office space, the World Trade Center. I went, oh my God, this is great. So we went to the 79th floor. I remember walking in to the 79th floor, windows overlooking Manhattan. It was the North Tower, Tower 1. I went, oh, it was on the 79th floor. Beautiful. I said, wow, this is great. Receptionist, conference rooms. This was perfect. And I walked right over to the window and I looked out and the salesperson came over and says, Mr. Molno, what's wrong? And I said, I'm just looking to see what it'll take to get out this window if my business fails. She went, Phillips screwdriver. You think you're original, but you're not. So I rented space there. And business was good. I was by myself. Then I hired somebody, but it started to really activate. I was there for 18 years. I was the longest tenant they had on that floor. They gave me a party. And it was a nice party. It was a plaques and all, spiritual advisor, the World Trade Center. I mean, it was just great. And I was Sean said to me this. He says, look, I don't want you to go to church with me. I like that because if I thought this was about church, I'm not in. He says, it's about Jesus. He says, but you should go to a Bible-believing teaching church. So I went interviewing pastors. I mean, how nuts is that? I'd go into a church and say, do you believe in Jesus? They'd say, well, yes, but. I said, okay, next church. I'd go to another church, and then another one, and then another one. And every day I'd come home, every Sunday I'd come home and tell my wife what was going on. No, it was not for us. And then I walked by this church, it said, Bible-believing teaching church. I went, oh my God, this is perfect. So 2 weeks later, I'm still handing out bulletins at the entrance of the church. So I started to learn. I didn't know how much I had to learn, but I started to learn about the Bible. And the pastor's wife called me after a few years. And she said, Jerry, Dr. Dobson had an executive on the radio, and he was talking about a luncheon, and he had a story similar to you with the alcoholism and all. I went, oh, really? Yeah, and he invited people to this luncheon. I said, did you get his number? She says, yeah, I did. So I went to this luncheon. It was on 42nd Street. And I went, oh my God, I walked in. The first thing I said, I can make a lot of money here. They're all executives, all businessmen. I said, this is great. Anyway, this one guy came up to me and he says, hey, I'm Dick Arthur. I said, so I met this guy, Dick Arthur. He was a nice guy and he says, I'm from the Wall Street, I own a company, so and so. That was great. And then Mr. Anderson asked me to come to another business meeting, a luncheon the next day. It was in the Wall Street area. It was a watering hole called Harry's, and it's famous for business people. So I went, and I said, this is phenomenal. So they said, can we visit you in your office? I said, sure. So they came up. And what they really wanted to know was if I knew God, which was great. There was a follow-up committee, and we started this incredible Bible study in my office. And we had it for years. In 1991, Billy Graham came through the Meadowlands, and two guys asked me to go. One was an electrician, and the other one was a bond trader. And my wife and I took them, and they ran down to accept Jesus. I said to my wife, I'm in trouble. She says, why? I said, I have to teach them. I don't know what I'm doing. So I had already had a few months, actually a little bit more than a few months experience in Timothy, which was a Bible study for CBMC, Christian Businessmen, where Paul took Timothy through the scriptures. And I said to Dick, my friend, I said, what do I do? He says, well, you got a little Timothy in you. I said, yeah, but I only got 2 months head start. So I started to, ladies and gentlemen, the internet said 2,000 people came through my house. It wasn't 2,000, but I'll tell you, it was a lot. It was a lot. And we had, in my house, we had three floors. I called the bottom the catacombs when you'd first come in. Then the second one was the first floor with Christians older than 2 weeks. And then it had the top floor, which was the women. This went like a charm. I mean, I had Bible teachers come in. I'm not really a good Bible teacher. I'll be honest with you, I'm not, you know. I really don't have the patience. But I had people come in to teach. And we did this for 26 years, this Bible study in my home. And we have people in Washington that work for the White House that came through my house and became Christians. So it's really interesting. In 1993, I have this study in my house now since 91. In 93, my wife said to me, I would like to go down to Jersey Shore. So I said, okay. I took a day off. She got a migraine headache, and I stayed home. That first bomb that went off in 93 was my parking space. I missed that. I went, oh my God. Some people died, then, you know, that in B2 lot. I come back to work, and we had to take some time off, so they cleaned up the soot that came through the system. And she said, let's go somewhere for a day, because I'm like a workaholic. And I took another day off. A fire breaks out on the 78th floor of the World Trade Center. All the people that worked with me had to walk down 79 flights of stairs. I missed it. They were waiting for me the next day. They said, you missed it twice. Where were you? If you miss it again, call us. We're not going to work. And the sad part about it is, let me go to 2001. In May 2001, one of my kids got a doctorate from Biola in California. She's a Christian psychologist. And we went there and we were excited. Here I am, a ninth grade dropout. My daughter, one daughter's an opera singer. The other one's a psychologist. How the hell has that happened? I mean, I can't speak English. And here's the truth, that I was in shock when we went to California. My wife said, let's have body scans. It was a new thing at the time. So we got body scans. There was plaque on the heart valve, there's diverticulitis. I had everything wrong with me. There was nothing wrong with my wife. So We celebrated with pizza and ice cream at a local mall. She got her doctorate degree. A couple of months later in July 2001, there was an international conference, and it was a CBMC conference. And it was people from all over the world that we know people from the ministry. And my wife had a pain, and I took it to the hospital, and they diagnosed it as kidney stones. And they gave us Librium and Valium and sent us back to the room. Less than 24 hours later, she raised up in bed and she says, "Jerry, I'm dying." I said, "This can't be." So when she went back, I gave her CPR and of course called 911. And she said, "I'm gone, I'm done." It was an aneurysm. She died in my arms. I was married 35 years to this woman. I was devastated. If you lost a spouse, you know what I'm talking about. I had all I could do from keeping my head out of the oven. I wanted to kill myself. I truly did. So, the Bible study we were studying in Atlanta in this international conference was the book of Jabez. Bruce Wilkinson was the Bible teacher. And the book of Jabez was, you ask God to extend your territory. And that's what he did, and God did that. I'm just paraphrasing it, and he extended her territory. She went to heaven, and he brought me to Minnesota. I mean, this is the way it is. I'm not kidding you. I mean, I do this a lot. I get up and I talk about it a lot. But you know, the pain is still there when she died. And I just like to just go off the rail on this one and say, if you're still married, you gotta appreciate this woman. Because that was a pain in the ass. I mean, I'm serious. I would like this business guy that didn't have time for anybody. I remember going to the mall with my wife, and she had like 100 pairs of shoes, and she always wanted to buy another one. And I'd say, what are we gonna do with these shoes? And of course I'd buy it, but when she died, if she came back for 5 minutes, I would have bought her a shoe store. I'm not kidding you. I was devastated. Every older couple that went by, I'd start crying because they were holding hands. I missed that. I missed her being there. I'd smell her pillow every night. I wouldn't move her shoes. I'm sorry. And 2 months later, September 11th, I didn't know how to fix the digital clock radio that used to get me up at night, get me up in the morning. And I overslept. And that first plane hit my office and killed all the people that worked with me. I gotta share this with you, and to be honest with you, the whole city could have collapsed. The pain of losing my wife was so deep and so severe that I knew I would go to all these funerals of all my friends, and I still had the pain of losing my wife. I want to tell you some of the people in the World Trade Center. I had this study, and it was a man's study. And this one day, seven men came in, and they said, what are we studying today? We said, 1 Thessalonians, the coming of the Lord. And three of the men were grandfathers and said, oh no, we're not ready to go. We got grandchildren, we're gonna raise our grandchildren. And the four started laughing and said, we're ready to go. Well, you know the story. The four that said they're ready to go died in the Trade Center. And there was another guy I'm on the 79th floor, and they called him Reverend Al. He was up on like 96th or something like that. And he ran an operations department for one of the major brokerage firms. And when the plane hit, the smoke and the heat started to melt everything. And he got on a desk and he said, I'm going to heaven. We only have minutes left. Who wants to go? And they all said, we're ready. So they all prayed to receive Jesus. I mean, this was amazing to me. How do we know the story? The story is, he says, get on your cell phones, call your wives, your fathers, your mothers, call everybody and tell them, don't worry about me. I'm going to heaven. And the New York Times had a little article that big. And I'm telling this story all over the country. And I'm saying, what if I'm wrong? So somebody got me Al's wife, and I called her and I said, I'm Jerry Molnar, I was on a 70. I went through the story. She says, yeah. Al stood on his desk, and everybody prayed this prayer, asking Jesus to come into their hearts. So at least 50 people prayed this prayer. Whether it was real or not, whether they went to heaven, I don't know. But what a guy. He was my idol in the World Trade Center. Anybody that could do that. I love to talk to men, basically, one-on-one, because I know what pain is. You see, God doesn't waste pain. He doesn't waste it. I'll be honest with you, I don't like doing this. I don't speak English right. I'm serious. I'm a New York guy. I'm like crude and rude sometimes. But you know what? When I get a telephone call to come to a place like this, I find it, this is from God. It's not me. Because I'm like Moses, for God's sake. I'm saying, I can't do this. I hyperventilate. The first couple of times I did this, I've done this 100 times. The first couple of times I would, I had to have a paper bag on the, and they thought I was kidding. I'm like, oh God, get me through this. Years go by, and I live in this house that's pretty big, but it's lonely. I don't even have a dog. And when my wife died, it was over for me. I basically asked God, yeah, take me home. I just can't take this anymore. My daughter, the shrink, said to me, Dad, you could tie your own shoes, you know. You're going to be okay. She's the one that got me into AA when she was 13. So I listened to her. I said, you're right. So I get a telephone call from a senator from Kentucky. His name is Philpott, Tim Philpott. And he says to me, Jerry, now I'm on this speaking tour, right? He says, we need a speaker in Monterrey, Mexico. I said, not a shot. It was an international conference, the last one, my wife died. He says, no, we want you to come. I says, there's so many speakers in the United States. You don't need me. He says, okay, hangs up. I'm supposed to go to Arizona. I told him, I says, I'm going to Arizona. There's some people that booked me a year in advance. And he says, okay. Arizona calls and they cancel me. I said, wow, I wonder what happened here. Tim Philpott canceled me. And then he calls and he says to me, we still want you to come. I said, Tim, I'm going to Arizona. And he knew that they canceled me. And I was lying. And he says to me, you ready for this one? God told me to tell you. He pulled the God card. I couldn't believe it. I said, that's the ugliest thing you could do. So I said, okay, I'll go. So I went to Mexico. And I'm a big baby. I don't want to be in Mexico. You know, I'm tired. I'm going all over the place. And then I spot this woman. I went, oh, my God. She's beautiful. I don't know how to do this. I haven't made a pass at a woman in 30-something years. Oh, closer to 40. And I remember as a kid, to get their attention, you'd go, you know. So here I am in Monterrey, Mexico with 2,000 people. Tim Philpott said, what the hell are you doing? I said, I'm trying to get her attention. I said, who is she? He says, she's Gracie Gomez. She's a widow, and she's a good catch. I went, game on. How do I do this? He says, go over and talk to her. I said, no, I can't do that. She's walking through the aisle, and I went, oh, my God, here she comes. So jump up. Excuse me, I'm Jerry Molnar. I'm the U.S. speaker, the only U.S. speaker there. There was like 2,000 people in the audience, 50 countries, you know. And I'm like, at least you can come and hear me speak. She says, oh, no, my son's a pastor, and I never miss church. I went, sister, you can miss it once. She says, no. I said, okay. I went, you know, I would kill for a cup of coffee. She went, and people running all these Mexicans running all over the place. I went, what the hell? She goes back and she said to them, there's a crazy American out there. He's going to stop killing people if he doesn't have coffee. So they came out with trays of dessert, coffee. Anyway, the audience was pretty big. And I'm scanning the audience looking for her. Zzz, zzz. She's not there. So I get invited to the White House. I go to George Bush. It wasn't me personally, okay? It was a Christian group that I belonged to with Dobson and a couple of other gentlemen, Charles Stanley and all. And I was just happy to be there, okay? I'm happy to be anywhere. So I get back from Washington and the phone rings. Oh no, I got an email from Mexico. Her son sent me to Mexico. How's George? Meaning George Bush. I went, geez, yeah, okay. My mother would like to talk to you. I went, oh my God, this is it. I call, she says, I like very much to talk to you, but I prefer us starting off email. I went, what the heck? I'm a New Yorker, come on, give me a break. Where's the flight? I'm fly out there. That's how it started. So when I found out, she flew in, because at the time we had an apartment across from the New York Stock Exchange, not me, but the company I was with. And I used that, and she stayed. And I'm a hypochondriac, to be honest with you, okay? And she's a retired doctor, so this was perfect. I chase her to the books every day. Every day I wake up, she says, what's the disease of the day? I said, I think I need a hip replacement. She says, which one? I said, the left. She said, that was last week. How about this week? So we got married. Here's the ironic thing. Her husband, he was a doctor who passed away in his 50s. He was born February 6th, blah, blah, blah. My wife was born that year. They died the same month. They were the same age. Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not superstitious, but man. Hey, you know what I want to talk to you about? I'm probably not coming back to Minnesota, let's be honest. Okay, they're fed up with me. Loving your spouse. Time is short. You know, I was born in 1943, in April 23rd, 1943. My tombstone is going to be 1943, and then there's another age that I'm going to die at. Could be tomorrow, could be next week, or whatever. But I live in the dash. And this dash is a dash. So, if you have somebody that you could love and care about, that's the most important thing for me. You know, I like to read this about businessmen. We're too busy for anything, you know? We're looking to make money all the time. How ridiculous is that? Seriously. And when you hit 75 and you start to get overweight, you realize your life is close. It's over. God doesn't waste pain. Today, that's all we have. I would like to leave this for the busy executive. The wood already exists on earth that will make up your caskets. I'm going to wrap this up, but you know that prayer I said 35 years ago? I have it here. I'm not going to ask you to come up because there's not going to be an altar call. I just want to repeat this prayer. I just want to make sure everybody here is going to heaven, because I want you to meet me, okay? I'm probably going to go ahead of you, all right? So come over to me in heaven and say, hey, I was at that meeting, because this is real. Bow your head for a minute, please. Dear God, I know that I'm a sinner and need your forgiveness. I believe that your Son, Jesus Christ, died on the cross for my sins. I want to turn from my sins and ask you to forgive me for my sins. I now receive you, your gift of eternal life, and I am willing to trust and follow you as the Savior and Lord. In Jesus' name, amen. Minnesota, thank you so much. Thank you.